Imagine traveling back to a time before the internet, before Mountain Dew Livewire, and before the Neo post-apocalypse. This summer, Apocalypse Video asked the question, where were you in 1982?
I mean, what happened? How did everything that was so good get so bad?
A time when men were men.
I got nowhere else to go! I got nowhere else to go!
Women were women.
You gotta be fucking kidding.
And mice could talk.
My son Timothy is so sick.
Join us all summer long as we celebrate the box office hits and misses of 1982. The date is May 21st, 1982. The theme song from Chariots of Fire is climbing the charts as it inspires a generation of parody videos. And meanwhile, a little drama about 1950s nostalgia is about to open wide and let the boomers relive their glory days. The film is Diner, and it's open for business now.
There's a little place where people gather to enjoy the banquet of life.
I get a date with Carol Heathrow.
She is death.
It's the diner. And what they really want most isn't on the menu.
Go on.
Eddie's giving Elise a football quiz. If she fails, the marriage is off.
And if she passes, it's two more days to the thing. Marriage.
You're a virgin, aren't you?
Technically.
Come on. You miserable creature.
It's a slice of life.
Did you turn into such a thing?
Monday, I'll look it.
With a touch of spice.
Better put the damn sheep down.
And a little love.
I was admiring your horse.
How were you?
A few beers. A few tears. A few great years.
You happy with your marriage or what?
Beth is terrific and everything, but
always got the diner.
Yeah, we always got the diner.
They were sharing good times that soon became old times.
My prayer. Flip side, Heaven on Earth, recorded by the Platters for Mercury Records, color of the label maroon.
Nothing could be finer than eating at the diner.
These are like a building with feet.
Where friends show up, but mostly show off.
I'll hit you so hard, I'll kill your whole family.
You guys really are sick, you know that?
It's because you got no sense of humor.
It's a place to stop before moving on. Diner. It's open all day and cooking all night.
Okay, guys, so let me ask you guys something. When you want to make out with a girl, you know, get all romantic, what record do you put on? Tom DeLonge or Matt Skiba?
That's a record I play. Yeah. Mm. I like what you're doing there, Mike. Dave, but... you're a little off, I think.
There's a Tom DeLonge solo album, and there's, of course, Matt Skiba and The Secrets. Who could forget his solo project?
True. I think he was trying to say it's like this is the same guy kind of thing, but like I don't know if the comparison to Sinatra and who was it? It was
someone no one's ever heard of. Mathis.
Johnny Matheson.
Johnny Matheson.
Johnny Matheson.
Fit. I mean, maybe.
Well, no, I know they don't fit, but I wanted to do something that was specific to you guys.
Maybe you're like DeLonge. Maybe if you said, yeah, I mean, okay, maybe he's going with like Alkaline Trio or something.
I think the joke would have played better, Dave, like, if you had said Alkaline Trio or Blink 182
or Green Day and Blink 182.
Green Day and Blink.
Well, they were talking about the singers though.
Yeah, but those were solo. There, that was, I love it. We love what you're 50s. Doing. We love the sentiment. It's the thought that counts, yeah. Dave. It's the
thing is, Dave, that this movie took place in the 50s before they invented bands. They only had singers then. The 60s, the Beatles invented bands.
They didn't have bands until then. Yeah, that's it. Maybe he would. What if he went with, like, I don't know, what's like some solo artist? Do you know, the only solo I know is like Olivia Rodrigo and. I don't know. Sabrina Carpenter.
Dua Lipa?
Dua Lipa. Yeah. Isn't that? Yeah.
So here's why. I don't know if this has been brought up on the show or not, but much like Marge Simpson, for me, music is none of my business. Like, I don't really know anything about music. I mean, I know music, obviously. Of course, I listen to music, but it's like, I couldn't tell you the names of band members from bands or what a, you know, music lingo. Like,
what would you think the closest one you think is? Like, if you can name the most stuff about a band, is there one?
Oh, what's the band you know the most about? I'm going to guess it's AC/DC.
But do you know all the members' names?
I think I can try. Okay. All right, we're getting quiz now. This is basically our version of the football quiz.
Yeah, we're
Wait, Ryan, do you know who the band members of AC/DC are to, like,
fact
check
him? I know the Australian, and I barely knew that.
Okay, I may be getting his name wrong, but the original lead singer of AC/DC, I think, was Bon Scott, I believe?
Oh. Yes, that
he
sounds...
He was replaced by Brian Johnson in 1980 for the Back in Black album.
Okay, this is some stuff. Okay, you're getting me hot, Dave. Come on.
The band was formed, of course, by the two brothers, the Young Brothers, Angus and Malcolm Young. Angus was on lead guitar. Malcolm was on bass or rhythm. See, again, this is where the music thing, I'm not exactly
sure. You're getting me. Good. Well, wow.
And then the drummer was Paul Rudd, or something like that.
Rudd was the drummer for AC/DC.
Okay, well, as I said it, I'm like, I know his last name's Rudd, but I was like, was it Phil Rudd, maybe? But Paul Rudd. He would later be replaced by, in the 80s, a bald dude. I don't remember his name.
Phil Rudd.
Phil Rudd, that's what it was. When I said Paul Rudd, I'm like, that's not right. Anyway,
Did we say Malcolm Young?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, all right.
The bald guy is Chris Slade.
Chris Slade, he was on, like, the late 80s. He was on, big one was on the Razor's Edge
album. That's pretty good, Dave. I think you know something about music. I think you know.
Yeah. You might be the only one who knows who Chris Slade is.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know what those, I know Angus Young, what he looks like, and Brian Johnson, but I couldn't name their names, probably. I mean, the guy with the shorts and the guy with the hat.
Fun fact, this might be a legend, I don't know, so I'm going to cover my ass, but Phil Rudd apparently was, maybe I'm talking out of turn here, but I feel like he was involved somehow in, like, a homicide. Maybe talking out of turn there, might be a legend, just throw that out there, but like Wikipedia it. That.
Well, let's just leave it out there without any elaboration.
You know stuff about some music. Everyone has something. You know, I'm always digging for that. When people say they don't know something, I'm like, you got to have something.
I mean, obviously, there's big ones. Like, you mentioned the Beatles, Paul, John, Ringo, and George, you know.
I was going to say, I was like, holy shit, is he not going to be able to do it?
In 2014, Phil Rudd was arrested and charged with attempting to procure a murder, which I assume is attempting to hire a hitman, threatening to kill, possession of methamphetamine, and possession of cannabis. Again, this was 2014.
So this isn't alleged.
This isn't like a crazy 80s story. This is the 2014. But the charge of attempting to procure murder was withdrawn the following day.
Oh.
And then he pled.
The following day.
But then he pled guilty to the rest of the charges, which I don't know if this is like a plea deal, with the exception of one of two threatening to kill charges. So. Interesting. His ongoing legal problems led to the recruitment of Chris Slade in time for the Rock or Bust world tour.
We got a rock or I'm going to bust.
Wow. Well, that was another good episode of our AC/DC podcast, guys.
Well, it's appropriate that we were just kind of just bullshitting, because that's very much the vibe of this movie. This is very of Diner. This is very much just like, I watched this with Morten Hoof, and I think he described this movie perfectly. This movie just sort of moseys, you know, like, this is one of those movies like Dazed to Confuse, just sort of a day in the life, a slice of life type movie where you're just like, there's no real story. I mean, there kind of
is. It maybe a movie about nothing, Dave? Maybe?
Yes.
But maybe is that. In a diner quite a bit, you know? But, you know?
It's a movie
about... leaning in, Mike, like you have something to say.
It's just a movie about... It's a very much a movie about growing up and stuff.
Yeah, I know. But I'm just saying, like, in a way, there's no plot, though.
I mean, it's like... I mean, if we can get into the plot right now...
Also,
like,
by the way, Dave, you... You never asked me what's on the flip side. I'm just going to say that. That was...
Sorry. That's why our friendship has always been strained. Yeah. I never ask Ryan what's on the flip side. What's on the flip side of Blink-182's California? Go!
Parking Lot is on the flip side.
The bonus tracks.
The bonus tracks.
See, I got Mike in the other room. He's listening in on the other side of the door.
Yeah. What I don't remember, that's the only song I remember. Is there any other B-sides of California you remember?
They all blend together for me. I think Misery is a B-side, but...
Never mind. All right.
Well, this movie just kind of moseys, as Nick Martin Hoof said. And, you know, sometimes I like Dazed and Confused is a movie I enjoy, and that movie definitely just moseys. There's no real story. It's just, we're just kind of hanging out. It's a hangout movie.
Yeah, you gotta introduce us, Dave.
Well, that's, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm your host, Dave. I'm joined again by Ryan.
Yeah, you never asked me what's on the flip side. That was my quote. I was trying to get you to get to that point of introducing me.
And standing on the other side of the door to make sure I get those AC/DC questions right is Michael.
I'll hit you so hard I kill your whole family.
Oh, that line. There are some good lines in this movie. That was one that I wrote down.
this is one of those ones where there's like a couple good quotes.
Yeah, it's probably a movie that I think, like, if you caught this more, I think it'd probably sink in, especially if you watched it at the time. You know what I mean?
I think, this movie, I feel like this is a movie you got to watch for maximum impact when you are their age, in like your early mid-20s.
I mean, is it too reductive to say this is like Dazed and Confused before Dazed and Confused?
No, I think you're right. And then I think I was trying to track it back even farther to see if like when this kind of vibe starts. And I was thinking of
very like French New Wave, I feel like is the first time.
And so it's definitely like runoff of that. And I think you
haven't seen Breathless, Ryan, but this is that's basically what Breathless is.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking of like, I guess the guy's ripping off all that stuff, like with like Last Picture Show, with like the Peter Bogdanovich movies and stuff. And that movie is like this, because there's a lot of movie theater in that movie too. And I think, like, I was thinking of that. What this was just basically about, just like guys in a town and growing up and not moving on with their life or things changing.
And one person in the friend group is getting married.
Yeah, there's like things like that.
They're kind of getting together for that. It's Christmas. It's 1959. It's Baltimore.
I think it's very much like a movie about the time in your life. It's young adult, like emphasis, like capital Y young adult, like that time. You're out of, which is
some people are in college, some are out,
and I feel like it's more of a thing back in the 50s. You were probably more of an intense time, where I feel like now, more modern contemporary, you just delay adolescence forever. But here it's like that. I feel like you see the, like, you've graduated high school, now you're an adult, and like your friends are like already like 19 and married and having kids, and sort of about that time where like. I think between like 18 and like 25, probably, where you're like not really an adult at all. You're basically still a kid, but you're like in the adult world. Like there's, not to get too into the weeds, but there's like a shot of one of the guy's bedrooms. And I remember being like, this guy looks like he's like 15 years old or something.
It's
like
his room.
Yeah. His bedroom is giving like 15 year old boy.
Oh yeah, it's like smoking in there.
Well, he's still living with his parents at this point.
Yeah.
I'd never seen this all the way through, but I remember them showing, I think it might have been the second diner scene in one of the film classes I took. And I can't remember if it was screenwriting or if it was contemporary cinema, but I think it may have been like the guy comparing this to New Wave and like just sort of the natural dialogue, I think, was what they were talking about.
Well, a lot of this was improvised too,
apparently. Yeah, and like that's like unfortunately it was paywalled, and the Chad was blocking me to read the whole article, but
and Morton Huff collects all those.
Yeah, but there was I was able to read the first paragraph of a Vanity Fair piece that was like 40 years of diner, how like it started, it kicked off the career of like four big actors, and then also like paved the way for Seinfeld, Pulp Fiction, The Office, and Judd Apatow's career. And I think
Barry Levinson's in too.
Yeah, yeah, and him too is his first movie. And I think that Hootie went on to win an Oscar for, you know, holds up Rain Man.
But, yeah, Rain Man. Yeah, Barry Levinson is like an interesting. He's it's one of those ones where like I don't think about the, like the movies he's done. Once you list them out, I'm like, oh, I guess that I could see that all being the same director. Which is so Rain Man. The big ones are the Rain Man, The Natural, Good Morning Vietnam.
Natural.
Wag the Dog, which I just remember. I never saw Wag the Dog. I remember that came out in 97 when I was like a kid. And I have a memory of Wag the Dog of just being, that's a boring old people movie that I have no, none of my business was Wag the Dog, which may be a great movie. I don't know.
Barry Levinson is none of my business.
Yeah. That was eight year old
man director, you know, kind of guy, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, and then a lot of the actors, it kicked off. And then you're right, if it's a lot of improv, it's very much like the Judd Apatow playbook, you know, kind of stuff.
That's wild that he did Natural 2 years after this, because mm-hmm. this was a small movie, and it wasn't a huge hit. But I think it was critically acclaimed.
Yeah. I could see this getting buzz.
Especially at the time when you're in the middle of this boom of blockbusters kind of happening, you know.
Yeah. Talking 82, the 80s would go on to be a decade that was really nostalgic for the 50s, and I feel like this might have been on the cutting edge of that coming out in 82.
But it also doesn't do the American Graffiti like fun thing. It's not very. I don't think this could have probably been a lot of different decades.
Okay, you just hit on something, Ryan. This movie is billed as a comedy, and there are funny parts in it. You know, like that come out of the natural improvised conversation that these people have, especially from Paul Reiser. I think in the first diner
which
scene.
I thought he was in more of the movie. He was like not really in the movie that much.
He just floats around.
I thought he was like the star of this movie, and then I'm like, oh, he's not even in this.
But you hit on something. This is billed as a comedy. I think this is like more of a dramedy. Like honestly, I was like, these characters are kind of sad. A lot of the situations they find themselves in, it's billed to be sort of a comedic situation, but like maybe just watching it through modern eyes, I'm like, this is horrible.
I think it's I think some of that is the modern eyes. Like I think some of the stuff that, like American Graffiti, I think some of the stuff that would have played more as like wacky fun is a little like gross now.
Yeah.
But I also think like it's one of those comedies that's I think it's a comedy drama. I think that's a dramedy.
I really think the movie in a way you could place it in lots of different decades, not just 50s. I think I was trying to say like there's specifics, but it's not too specific. I think it would give you gender politics.
I think if you're from the 50s or if you, especially 59, I think it would give you what you want. I was trying to think of like if this was set now, this would be like a movie set in 2003, based on when it was made. And I feel like this would, if this came out in a movie like this, it would feel like very 2003 nostalgia. The conversation like they're having, like we were saying up at the top, like, okay, Sinatra or Mathis, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Well,
we've seen this, Mike. We've seen it on the show. We see what you're describing was shown to us perfectly in the film Madame Web, which was a period piece. We get to see, like, remember when kids would be in diners and they would talk about Britney Spears' new album?
Was I on the Madame? I truly do not remember if I was on that episode, if I saw that movie.
I blocked that episode out.
You saw the movie. I don't remember if you're on the episode or not, but
no, you were.
Yeah. We need that in the new wiki stat.
Yeah, was who's Mike on the Madame Web episode? Someone add that
trivia
to our Wikipedia, our fandom page. Kara, get on that.
Should we shout out our Wikipedia?
Well, yeah,
our
it's
fan
under construction, but it's a beautiful piece. I'm really I was taken aback by it this morning.
Right, so. Someone's taken it up to have a tome for the show. we gotta keep a record of this.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's incredible stuff. Kara's the under the number one of, I don't know what do we call our listeners. They have names.
I was trying to think of someone from this movie to refer to her as, but everyone in this movie is kind of like a little shithead.
Yeah. Exactly.
I was just trying to think, like, they're the, what do you as a video rental person, like, members called, I guess, you know? But that's not really that fun, you know?
Yeah. I feel like back in our old Hollywood video days, we would refer to the customers as guests, right? Didn't we have to refer to them as guests?
You're the one that, like, tucked your shirt in. I don't know what's going on.
Ryan was busy stealing the candy.
You son of a bitch.
Ryan, we have guests. We have guests in the store.
No, to be fair, to go on record, I hated that shit. I hated the fact that they were always just like, you got to greet every single person when they come in with a smile and a hello. How are you doing? Welcome to
Hollywood. I don't mind that.
Dave, you make me greet everyone who comes in with a hello and a smile.
I don't mind greeting. It's the next part sucks.
I don't know what to say, Mike. Like Jana says, hurt people, you know? Those policies really affected me.
The cycle of abuse with your video store.
Corporate abuse.
But yeah, I was in the middle of this movie, I'm like, what are we going to say about this movie? I don't know. Like, I like it, but like, I don't, it's like.
Well, because there's no tough, real plot. Yeah. Like we said, it's like a
It can be tough to talk about hangout films.
It's a hangout movie. Like a bunch, like you would think the plot is like, oh, okay, like. And there are a few threads in this story, in this movie, where it's like, oh, is this going to become something? But none of them really pay off in a way that I feel like most other movies would. Like, for example, like when Nick and I were watching this, Nick compared this movie a lot to Saturday Night Fever. And in Saturday Night Fever, it's sort of a similar vibe, kind of a hangout movie. But the plot thread of that is like, you know, the Travolta character. Like, is he going to get out of this area?
This is like,
move on to something bigger.
Much less, I think Saturday Night Fever is a good and interesting comparison. Like, it could be an interesting double feature, but like
people who never, like kids who never grew up or never got it. Well, I mean,
this
in
is decidedly
case, is
less
younger,
melodrama than Saturday Night Fever. I would,
and in
I think
that
movie,
too, shit happens. Like, someone, there's like an abortion, and like the kid gets who got the girl pregnant freaks out and he like kills himself. You know what I mean? Like, that movie escalates, whereas this movie just sort of like, it kind of worked out, sort of, you know, whatever.
I'd say, like, this is after kind of, like, sitting with the movie for a little bit. I was kind of, like, thinking, like, what, you know. What I do find interesting about it is, like, you say you have, like, a group of friends, like, that are together a lot and as a group. But then you do have, like, other dynamics with people, like, solo, like, one-on-one, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's almost like these lives you have separate from these groups.
You don't want to hang out with Mickey Rourke one-on-one.
Yeah, right? Like, I swear to God, I forgot that was him until the credits. And I was like, oh, my God, I forgot this was his movie.
Like, so I did some, like, I had to do, like, the whip the phone out the middle of the movie kind of thing. Like, wait a minute, is this? And I was also watching this. Jackie's not on. She couldn't be here today. She's working for a Morton Hoof. But we were both like like, it was one of those movies where everyone is so much younger than you're used to. There was actually multiples of this happened. So when the movie starts, there was a lot of like, is that Kevin Bacon? No, I don't think Kevin Bacon's
really? I was going to say Bacon was the one you're like, no mistaking that's
That's why I was like, is that Kevin Bacon? Because I was like, I just didn't know he was in this movie.
And Reiser. I feel like Paul Reiser is pretty spot on.
And we had to like, okay, this Kevin Bacon. And then the Mickey Rourke of it all was just because I saw Mickey Rourke was in the movie and I was like, who is Mickey Rourke supposed to be playing? Because I had no idea. And then I'm like, what? This guy, this Michael Madsen guy is.
Which is funny you say that.
I think we all know Michael Madsen
played him. Yeah.
The next year, there was a TV pilot that Barry Levinson wrote and directed the following year.
Which just feels like a TV show, I think, too. This year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
Free Willy's Own, Michael Madsen. so Mickey Rourke was, it's one of those things, too. I had the same, this is embarrassing, and this was when I was much younger, but I had a very similar reaction when I saw The Godfather, part one.
Pacino?
Yeah, and I was like, I thought Al Pacino was in this movie. Where's Al Pacino? Oh, yeah. And then I'm like, wait, that soft-spoken young boy is Al Pacino? and a lot of it, like the Mickey Rourke, is the voice. Like, because
he kind of talks softly like
kind of talking like this. I mean, but yeah, and then the face is just, he has like a plastic surgery face now. It's just not the same face that he used to have. And I was very surprised at what he used to look like.
Yeah, he's pretty. He looks crazy, like amazing. Like I'm just saying, like a like wow, what a looker that guy is.
Yeah, it's definitely like a good like he has a pockmark face, but it's also kind of like handsome, rugged, handsome. You know, but yeah, soft spoken.
Yeah.
It's
that hair.
You could see, yeah. And the hair in this movie too is one of the things that I don't know how I feel about it, but they clearly made no effort to make this look like the 50s with like the hair. Everyone in this movie is rocking the most 80s hair.
59? Is that what it is?
59, yeah. There is no.
Well, he's a hairdresser. Remember, he's like a hairdresser law school student.
There are not people. There is not a single man alive in 1959 who had Mickey Rourke's hair.
He was trying to. He was trying something. You know, he's getting ready for the 60s.
It's not just. It's. Edge. I mean, it's not. That's not even a 60s hairdo. That's an 80s. Right. They're all wearing like the most 80s hair. Well,
I don't know. I feel like Kevin Bacon's hairdo is very much like preppy, like 50s.
It would have been. It would have been greased back or something like that. It's all the poof. They all have the 80s poof going on.
What about you mentioned all the actors, but you haven't heard me. That's me. Me and my dad shared a moment. Daniel Stern.
Stern. He plays the married guy.
Yeah. I love him. I love him so much.
Home Alone really did a number on him because I think he's an interesting guy and a good actor.
Yeah, he's good in this movie.
But I kind of wish he was in like just like normal stuff. Like he never really.
You think it was Home Alone that did a number, not the Wonder Years?
Well, I'm just saying like he just kind of like didn't really do anything after. There was a couple like kids movies after Home Alone, but didn't really like wasn't like an actor anymore.
I don't know. I could see him just. Who knows, but I could see him having the career of just like, I'm getting work done, I'm making money, I'm fine. Like,
you think though, like you made
he would have been
money,
pretty old by but... like not old, but like normal retire age around, you know, the 2000s when he kind of stopped working anyway.
I mean, he directed Rookie of the Year in 1993. Remember that?
I bet he's doing just fine.
Yeah, I guess so. But anyway, I just think he's good, and it'd just be cool to see him in more stuff. Well, I guess he's on 10 episodes of For All Mankind.
Oh, wow. Okay. No, I think he's good in this movie. Like, honestly, I think everyone is good in this movie. Like, some of the characters, like Rourke's character is like a scumbag in this movie. And as far as, like, you mentioned, like, maybe he's inventing this hairstyle. I had a question. This probably isn't the case. But did this movie popularize the whole thing of the popcorn, like the dick through the popcorn box?
I was curious
does
about
start
that.
Here?
No way. No
I think
way.
It that might had be this.
Have, that had to have been
this?
A
I think
thing
it's
before.
This. I think it might be this because it's a very 80s like thing. Like a very
someone's got to do the research for that. But I just have to imagine that was a thing before this. That
I really
I think
that
was a
might
thing.
Be the cultural
the
impact
first
of this movie. I think
time, the first time a movie theater sold popcorn, someone was making that joke.
Should we look?
Look
okay,
dicks
what do
going
I what do I look
popcorn
up?
Boxes.
Tell
it
me what
all happened in the 50s.
Tell me what to Google exactly.
No, I don't want to tell you what to Google for this. I don't want to be responsible.
Okay, did
there's no way
1982.
You know what? While you're
the dick in a popcorn bucket.
While you're doing that, I just want the audience in home to Google 1959 hairstyles men and just appreciate how different the hairstyles are from any of the hairstyles we see in this movie.
He's on the cutting edge, literally.
All right, here we go. This is the Chad AI talking. So bear with, you know.
Chad AI is notoriously buggy. Also, has depleted all of the remaining water in Sector 8.
Chad AI? What's a good name for this?
Chad AI is not bad.
Chad? I don't know. Anyway,
Chad says, GPT?
I asked it. I said, did Diner 1982 invent the penis in a popcorn bucket? That's all I asked. It said, yes. The 1982 film Diner is widely credited and popularized with popularizing and often considered the originator of the penis in a popcorn bucket prank in pop culture.
Wow.
Says it right
in
here.
Pop culture. Yeah. So specifically in pop culture. So I'm sure this was happening. I mean, I imagine Barry Levinson took this from like a story he heard from a friend or something like that.
It sounds like the kind of thing you joke around with, like your like no one actually does it, but you're like joking about it. They'll like, you know, with your dirtbag friends.
But this, yeah, I mean, again, as I said, this movie often billed mainly as a comedy. This scene, watching it with modern eyes, was like, This was like the Porky scene of the movie, essentially. This was like the gross out scene where, well, I guess it's not gross out. You don't see anything, but the suggestion of it.
It's
and then
pretty
the follow
gross.
Up scene when he follows the girl into the bathroom when she rightfully is revolted, and he just like, no, see, you don't. He spins this yarn of how, no, it was an accident. And like, I was excited by the movie and I got a boner, and like, you know, like you reached in at the wrong moment. I had to like open my fly to kind of adjust some things. And she buys it, and it's just like, are you kidding me? She's like, oh, I guess that makes sense.
No, I don't. Am I embarrassing you?
Go on.
I don't know. It's just that the pain was killing me, you know? It was to stop the pain, it was digging into the side of my leg. So what I did was, you know, I opened my fly to loosen everything up, just to give it a little air. And, you know, it worked. Everything settled down, and then I got, you know, caught back up in the picture. And then, you know, that's when Sandra got her leg caught on the bush, and she lifted up her dress. You know, it just popped right up and went through the bottom of the popcorn box. And with the force of it just opened up the flap.
It just pushed the flap open?
It's Ripley's, I'm telling you. It just pushed the flap right open, and I couldn't move the box. You know, you would have seen it.
That's true.
At least this is the scumbag character, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think this would have
a little scummy.
This would have been tougher to swallow if it was like the
Paul Reiser.
Yeah, Paul Reiser, like the Daniel Stern character or something, or someone we're supposed to empathize a little bit more with. But we're definitely I think, supposed to be a little leery of the Mickey Rourke character.
Okay. I have some more news about this. So I found an article from
Breaking
Mail
news.
Magazine, and it talked about it. It's really funny the way that they read this is it goes like the history of popcorn and movie theaters. That's where it starts and stuff like that.
Where does the dick come in?
Yeah, we're all waiting for the dark turn.
Yeah, it just goes like, it has a bunch of questions like, what instrument does it use to cut the hole? What does he gauge the correct hole size? How does it How does not a bunch of popcorn fall out?
I believe in this one, there's no hole cut, and we're to believe like he opened the flap, which does imply popcorn was everywhere.
It talks about that, you know, the first movie theaters opened in L.A. in 1902, and the Great Train Robbery was a big one. And then he said that the popcorn started, you know, a lot within that time in the 50s. So the popcorn thing probably didn't happen until the 50s, but it says here that speaking of theaters, the dick and popcorn box doesn't appear in movies until 1980 in the French comedy, leave it to the French, La Boum. L-A-B-O-U-M. Is that La Boum? Is that how you say that?
Is it La Penis in Popcorn?
It's a teen sex comedy in 1980 from the French. And apparently that is in there. It says where a junior high age boy slips it in, and suffice it to say, his female companion's reaction is not delight. So it happens in that 1980, 2 years later, it's in America.
Wow. Barry Levinson ripped that off. I guarantee it.
And Levinson gets all the credit for the dick in a popcorn box. Man, what a crime.
And then, you know, of course, dick in a box with
France makes, America takes.
It's my dick in a box. And then, you know, that's where we
And then that's when the joke ended. Yeah. Bang.
That's kind of the nail in the coffin.
Hmm. Well, anyway. Yeah, we're kind of talking about a lot of things. This movie is really just a collection of scenes.
There's kind of a through line here of one of the characters is about to be getting married, and another, and that's kind of driving it. And I
that's
think on
the main, yeah.
Well, there's kind of two things that's kind of driving it in sort of a semi positive way or something that's like exciting. But then on the flip side, the Mickey Rourke character is kind of like in some shit where he's basically his arc is he's lost a bet for $2,000, which is more than $2,000 in 1959. And he has to get it or he's, you know, the person, he's like some loan shark who's like on his ass, and you get the feeling will seriously mess him up if he doesn't provide payment. So I think that the will he get the $2,000 by tonight, which is like the deadline, was I think for me something that was keeping my attention and like kind of having some momentum for it.
He's getting further in, like into the red, like basically, yeah. he keeps making like he's a compulsive gambler. He keeps making all these bets with his friends, which kind of leads to like the popcorn thing. That's like the genesis of it. It's like, I bet you that I can get what's her face to like grab my wiener, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, he keeps making these like sex bets with his friends. Yeah.
I bet that I'll bang so-and-so. They're like, so-and-so, I'll take that action.
Yeah, yeah.
And that leads to, like, one of the craziest scenes in the movie where that doesn't happen, that doesn't go through. So he convinces Daniel Stern's wife, Beth, played by Ellen Barkin, like, well, he doesn't tell her this. Basically, like, and it's crazy, too. Like, so Daniel Stern, to me, that was the more interesting part of the movie, drama-wise, was
Daniel
the
Stern
relationship and between Daniel Stern and his wife, Beth.
Well, that is a really good arc. I kind of agree that's like the heart of the movie. It's not really anything though that is driving it forward. Like that's kind of what I mean.
The Mickey Rourke thing is kind of
the Mickey Rourke gives you a deadline. It gives you a ticking clock. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Steve.
Those are sort of the driving things. And there's like a whole other spot with Tim Daly where he's just like, you know, he's coming back from college. He's the only one in the town who seems to have gotten out. He went to college outside of town and he comes back for the wedding. And I guess like a month prior, he got a girl pregnant who works in the town, and that's sort of a thing.
Yeah, she visited and stuff. And
I kind of like though the you say getting out. I don't get the feeling this is like the kind of like, I mean, it's Baltimore, right? It's not like it's like a small town where it's like, I actually kind of really like
the vibe
this
that it kind of has a little bit.
I don't think so. I think it's just he did leave. I don't think it's like a he got out of town, like
maybe
got out of this
so
hellhole.
Getting out of town, maybe it's
like I think they like it. I think they like it. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like not doing the same thing, going to the diner till 4 a.m.
But I don't think it's the vibe of like you made it out of this deadbeat town. Like I think they like it there. I think it's a nice play. I mean, it's goes without saying, but the setting of the movie is a big thing, and beyond just the diner, I saw that this is one of a few movies he made specifically about Baltimore and or set in Baltimore, and I think it's cool. I like seeing movies like it's an interesting setting. It's a movie like this. I feel like you either get it set in the dying small town or New York City, and I like that this is like in between that, like it's not the uber metropolis, but it's also not like Nowheresville, nowhere.
Like the Last Picture Show is, and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also like the, they never really talk about like you need to get out of here, but it is really growing up, and like I think like it's, and that's what that kid's trying to do by like trying to marry the girl he got pregnant, kind of thing. You know, just like I have no other choice, you know, type of thing. But she doesn't want to. Seems like she likes her little career as a she's like working like as a is she like a producer at the radio at the
she look, like, I, it looked like she was like
control booth.
Yeah, that's a cool she looked like she had a cool job.
Yeah, and she may be even someone that, you know, gets an abortion or something. Like maybe that's why she's just like, I don't want to marry you. I have something going on here, you know, kind of thing.
I'm but a new generation, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's sort of like, it's all, and then there's also Kevin Bacon is definitely like an alcoholic and is like, they don't really, that kind of just, you know, is still happening, is functioning.
Who's also like kind of a low-key genius, I guess. You see him watching like a Jeopardy-esque show and he's going to
be
a question,
yeah, that's right.
Right,
yeah.
I forgot about that. And then, there's a lot of weird things with quizzing in this movie too, everything. There's a lot of weird scenes.
Like again, this is all, a lot of it just feels like stories and things that happened to Barry Levinson, like that he kind of collected and put into this movie.
I think it's one of those movies too, where like, I think from scene to scene, sometimes it can be tough to gauge how much time has passed or like, I found myself wondering that a lot of like, it's a little dreamy in that way where I'm like, did weeks go by? Is this the next morning? Like, where are we exactly?
Yeah, sometimes there are bits in the movie where I'm like, wait, did a day pass? Or, and then like Nick had to tell me like, no, I think it's the same day. They're in their same clothes. I'm like, oh yeah.
Well,
like,
they wore the same suits every day, probably, you know?
Yeah, but there's a point in the movie that's so crazy. Like, so as you mentioned, they just basically hang out in this diner until like 4 or 5 in the morning. There's one point where like, okay, we're done with the diner. And I guess Mickey Rourke and I forget who else was in the car with him. Mickey Rourke and some one of his friends are like driving, and the scene ends where it's like, well, you know, so you want to keep driving? Nah. They're just driving. And I turned over to Nick and I'm like, God, the 50s were fucking boring.
What else to do? Driving was like the entertainment. Yeah.
All you did was drive. Nowhere in particular, just driving around.
Nowhere else. Yeah. No particular place to go. Yeah, Chuck Taylor.
People just killing time until video games were invented.
Yeah, here
to the movies a lot. Remember they go
here
to see,
in 3 years. Seal? In 3 years, Seal? They're going to release Super Mario Brothers. Yeah, that'll be fun.
Kids are going to love it.
They go and they go. There's two movies that happen. I don't know what movie they're watching when the popcorn scene happens, but they go see the Seventh Seal at some point.
They should have done that during Seventh Seal.
Dude, Mike, I could tell you as your filmversation buddy,
you see the marquee that's just like Bergman.
And when that scene started, when we see them walking in, I'm like, oh God, they're going to hate this movie. And one of them, Tim Daly's
that's
symbolic.
Literally the joke is like Bergman movies, arty, stuffy bullshit, you know?
What am I watching? Movie just started. I don't even know what's going on.
It's symbolic.
Who's that guy?
That's Death walking on the beach.
Been to Atlantic City 100 times. I never saw Death walk on a beach.
And of course, Gutenberg falls asleep. And I love it too when they leave. Like someone runs in, it's like, "Hey, you guys, come on, come quick! Kevin Bacon's causing a scene at the nativity scene outside the church. Come help us!" As they leave, you see another couple like nearby, like elsewhere in the theater, and the woman is asleep.
I forgot.
So a lot of people asleep in that theater.
I didn't realize that Tim Daly has been the voice of Superman for like 30 years.
Yeah, definitely.
It's crazy. He's good. He's a good Clark. He's a good Clark Kent. Superman. Anyway, that's a funny little scene. And then their friends come and get them to go because Kevin Bacon is fighting off the nativity scene.
I guess it's movies. And speaking of movies, like there was a and forgive us, we're not really necessarily going to have a straight through line with this episode. This is just a collection of moments that happen in this movie. Like, what I read a review on Letterboxd, one person I thought really nailed something. So, as I mentioned before, one of my favorite like dynamics in the movie was Daniel Stern and his wife Beth, played by Ellen Barkin. And like one of the big scenes of the movie is like Daniel Stern freaking out. Because they're in their home, he looks at his record collection, and he's, like, putting stuff back in different places, and she comes in, he's like, didn't we have a talk about how records are supposed to be, you know, alphabetized
Dave,
or whatever?
Dave, before you mention this, I want to set the tone of the relationship, because I think it is why this scene works, is what we know. So, I think this is a very 50s relationship they have, which is, they're kind of the only ones who are married in this friend group. I mean, obviously one is getting married,
like,
but they're
like quote unquote the grown-ups of the friend group.
Right, but they're not. They're like 20 or 21. And I think it's like they're the young people who are like, "Well, we got to get married. That's what people do. We get married out of high school." And they shouldn't have, you know? And there's a scene, one of the best scenes in the movie where Daniel Stern's talking to, I forget who, he's talking to one of the buds, and he's like,
"Yes.
You know,
he's starting to Gutenberg,
yeah." And he's like, you know, it's basically, he's talking about marriage life. Excuse me.
He's about to get married.
Yeah. And he starts doing the kind of joke about like, well, you know, you're not going to be making out or having sex months when you get married. Ha ha ha. Which is like, whatever. I think that's just, you know, normal joke. You've heard that joke a million times. But then it kind of gets a little more real where he's like, you know, Daniel Stern says something to the effect of like, you know, you and I, like, and me and a buds, like, we can talk, like, for hours and hours, and I can't talk to my wife for more than 5 minutes. Like, I just don't know what to talk about. It's basically like,
Jesus, I don't know. I tell you, a big part of the problem, though, when you get married, well, you know, when you're dating, everything is talking about sex, right? Where can we do it? You know, why can't we do it? Are your parents gonna be out so we can do it, you know? Trying to get a weekend just so that we can do it.
So you can do it.
Everything is just always talking about getting sex. And then planning the wedding. All the details.
Details.
Shit. But then, when you get married, it's crazy. I don't know. I mean, you can get it whenever you want it. You wake up in the morning and she's there, and you come home from work and she's there. And so all that sex planning talk is over with. And so is the wedding planning talk, because you're already married.
Right.
So, you know, I can come down here, we can bullshit the whole night away, but I cannot hold a 5-minute conversation with Beth. I mean, it's not her fault, I'm not blaming her, she's great, it's...
Oh, of course not.
It's just we got nothing to talk about. But it's good, it's good.
It's good. It's nice, right?
It's nice. Yeah, it's nice.
But it's great, you know. Marriage is great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Marriage is great. Marriage is great. Yeah, it's one of the best scenes in the movie. So that happens, and then later in we get this scene, and I feel like the context is really important for like kind of the explosion of this scene about something so
stupid.
Well,
also too, before this scene, we get the first movie scene when they're walking out of the theater, and his wife Ellen Barkin, Beth, is like really into the movie. Like she has like the program. She's talking about like, oh yeah, so and so is in, and this was getting into what I was saying, like,
and Gutenberg is falling asleep. It
was like, he is so concerned about his, he has this rigid thing with how he catalogs his records and whatnot, whereas she kind of has her thing going on too with movies, apparently, that we kind of see hinted at here in this first movie scene, where she's like, oh, so-and-so is in this and that and the other thing, and yeah, he doesn't give a shit. Yeah. But clearly she has her own interests, and this pops up, and what's great,
it's not like she doesn't have interest, it's just that they
each have their own thing, but right, but they're not talking to each other to figure that out, to talk. Another thing, a really subtle thing I really liked in this was when they're walking out of the theater, he's with his friend group and she's there and they're walking and they start talking about like Tim Daly sees a guy that he knew in high school and he punches him from this long rivalry, and they're walking away and they're talking about the history of the rivalry. And Ellen Barkin is like in the back of the group, like in the rear, like kind of catch up, like, wait, but so who was so-and-so? Like, who is, like, she keeps asking, like, to get more info on this story that they're telling amongst each other. And I thought it was a really, really good, like, cool little micro scene there where it's like, you really get a look into their relationship.
Yeah.
She is, you know, like, he is with his friend group, he is with his element, and she is just sort of in the back, just like, who is so-and-so? Like, I'm trying to keep up with the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah,
was real. That felt real to me.
It doesn't seem to, the way it ends with them, to kind of wrap up, is that they're dancing and at the wedding, and he's like, "Oh, I got tickets to the Poconos, whatever." It's like it's
for
kinda,
10 days,
but and like it's sort of interesting because he just like doesn't ask her, "Hey, do you want to go?" It just kind of does it, but like I don't know. Hopefully, like there's still time. Like maybe they're so young that maybe they could restart, you know, kind of thing.
I think this is like a diplomatic retreat to the Poconos, where they're either going to come out of this stronger or they're going to decide they're going to get a
divorce.
That's
either the end, or it could be they end up getting pregnant.
But I think it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea. They have 10 days together to spend time with each other and figure
it
out.
They don't talk. They clearly don't talk, but they also clearly each have their own interests. And that would be the time to figure out what those things are.
The thing is, they also just don't know any better than the outside. Yeah. It's just like they need to like, that's it. You're right. It's like it could be the end or like a long end. You know what I mean? Like they get pregnant at the Pope, you know, that's when they conceive. And then it's like
a kid will fix this.
And then the rest of their lives is just like hell. You know what I mean? It's like, that's really what this movie's about, really, I think, is just like that next step.
Well, talk about the most important scene in the movie, the Blu-ray movie sorting sequence.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. So we've established like sort of the dynamics of this relationship.
Yeah, what did Morton Hoof think about this, too, I think?
Oh, he laughed. Yeah. He thought, yeah, it was relatable.
Well, we'll get into it, but Dave, set the scene, and then we can discuss.
Okay. So so the scene opens with like records being pulled out, and initially... I misread the opening of this because it's a close up of the records, like the spines, and you see a hand taking things out and putting things in. And at one point, Miles Davis's A Kind of Blue is pulled out. And there's been up to this point, there's been so much talk about sex. Like it's all these guys think about, like Steve Guttenberg, we find out, is a virgin. He's the one getting married. He's like, oh, I'll get married. I'll finally be able to have sex. So when he pulls out Miles Davis's A Kind of Blue, I'm like, someone's about to get down right now. Because that's like a banging record. I don't know if you know. Like, there's that whole conversation at the beginning of the movie. Like, who do you listen to get intimate with someone? Frank Sinatra or
Mathis.
I forget his name.
Mathis. I don't think Sinatra's really a good makeout guy. I don't know.
I would agree. But when we see this Miles Davis record being pulled
Stop
out, I thought that's what was being suggested.
Spreading the news.
But it was actually the exact opposite. It's like, did you fucking misorganize my records, Beth? Like, what? We talked about this.
Now what? The night have begun. Have you been playing my records?
Baby, ain't we having
Yeah,
fun.
So?
So didn't I tell you the procedure?
Yeah, you told me all about it, Trevi. They have to be in alphabetical order.
And what else?
They have to be filed alphabetically and according to year as well, okay?
And what else?
What else?
I don't know.
You don't know? Well, let me give you a hint, okay? I found my James Brown record filed under the J's instead of the B's. I don't know who taught you to alphabetize. But to top it off, he's in the rock and roll section. Instead of the R&B section, how can you do that?
It's too complicated, Shrevey. See, every time I pull out a record, there's this whole procedure I have to go through. I just want to hear the music, that's all.
Is it too complicated to just keep my records in the category, okay? Just put the rock and roll in with the rock and roll. Put the R&B in with the R&B.
And the thing that's, like, kind of heartbreaking about this scene is you can tell she's, like, trying. Like, yeah. she's like, I know your sorting system. I thought I put it, but he has such a freaking arcane, very specific thing, and he's such a dick about it.
He's
like,
a little, he's always naming all these things. There's a little spectrum about it, I feel like.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. The way he's like, he has this like weird, because he's like listing like, his like trick is he can say what the flip side of any record single is,
who the album,
but he's also like saying like the color of the like the thing on the record, which is like no one gives a shit about that, dude.
But it's a shame too, because Ellen Barkin is there and she's like, it's not like your music sucks. Like, no, I just wanted to listen to the record and listen and like the music. You know what I mean? Like, that could have been a situation where they're like, oh, we like the same music or something like that. But instead he's like, you didn't organize it correctly.
It's more about the organization and the music, but he likes the music too. It's just, he's listening to it differently, you know?
Yeah.
Well, he even says like each one of these things, like I have a specific memory tied to each song. Like when I walked through that door and I saw you the first time.
He does, and he tries to, he does the like nice guy thing of like, remembered 1957, you know, ain't that a shame? That's when I met you and I remember that. So, man, like, I don't like him.
When I listen to my records, they take me back to certain points in my life. Okay. Just don't touch my records ever. The first time that I met you, Modell Sisters high school graduation party, right? 1955. And Ain't That a Shame was playing when I walked in the door.
And she breaks down in tears, and like, it's such a shame too, because she ends up going to...
Ain't That
to,
a Shame.
She goes into the salon where
I'm kind of with Beth though at the organization. It should be vibes. No, go with vibes. Don't go with the alphabetization, all that stuff. Overrated, you know?
It was kind of funny, too, like, when you look at the scene, because it's not like he has a gigantic record collection. Mm-mm. From what we can see. It's like two small shelves.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's probably the start of, like, I remember in High Fidelity, he has, like, a whole apartment full of records, and he keeps reorganizing them when he's depressed and stuff.
I need to rewatch that.
You know, you gotta have a lot of stuff, I think, to be organizing by alphabetizing and year, but we're all about the vibes with these things, I think.
You know? I'm an alphabetical guy. I like just strictly alphabetical for my records. And then I do have like a separate, section for like soundtracks and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like classical and jazz. I guess I do kind of roughly have,
yeah, that
have
like
some
it's,
organization.
It's genre based, you know?
Yeah.
That's like, I mean, basically mine is compilations, soundtracks and stuff. And then it also what genre that compilation is. And then there's like punk is a separate section, but alphabetizing it, like, why, what are you doing? Like, you know, that's that's for crazy people. Sorry.
I think it makes it easier to find stuff at a certain point.
Yeah.
if you can go through it all real quick, then I guess that's what I'm saying.
The bigger the collection,
I think you got to get to like 200 records when you need to. That's when that happens. You know?
Yeah.
I think, in my opinion, I don't know. You can go through. I like being able to box through a lot of stuff real quick. Like of the vibe I'm looking for. Oh, perfect.
It's a shame that like Ellen Barkin and Daniel Stern can't get together because he has this blowout. He leaves out the door, and then the next day she goes and sees Mickey Rourke, who's working in the salon. And evidently, this is where we discover that they used to go out. And this kind of becomes a thing in the movie where it's like, hey, do you want to just have an affair real quick?
And she's like, right now, I want to have an affair.
Well, because we've gotten the sufficient seeds to see that their relationship sucks.
It does, and there's no end in sight, you know.
Well, we mean with Daniel Stern and her.
Yeah.
Well, in my but I also have this feeling it's like it's just starting to start feel shitty.
Well,
in my opinion,
because we see them in their car. It's not like they're constantly arguing. No, like, this is like the big argument.
I think she's almost like discovering that, like, oh, maybe this isn't all it's a crack up. Like, it hasn't, like, she hasn't realized maybe that, like, it's bad.
Yeah. And then she talks to Mickey Rourke, and it's just like, I don't even know who the hell I am anymore.
Yeah. When you're that young and you're getting married and stuff,
I don't know if we really mentioned, but like, we kind of hinted at, but I think another problem for her is she doesn't have this friend group, and so she's just got her husband, and she doesn't really have a relationship with her husband, so she's just kind of like alone. I think she's lonely.
Yeah, which is why I felt so bad for her in that scene. I feel like we could all relate to that too, when like he's with his friend group and she's just sort of like trailing behind and trying to like get into the conversation. Like, who are you guys talking about? Who was that? Like, that scene really hit for me. I felt bad for her.
I bet you she could. I mean, it's pretty late when how late they go, but she could probably hang at the bar at the diner and listen, you know, and get in on it. They could have a chick in there, you know.
And the problem is like a lot of it is like it's the time. Like the sexism and misogyny in this movie is kind of off the charts. And it is the 50s, it makes sense, but it is like kind of off the charts.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, in fact, she's one of the few women you see in this movie. There's like Steve Guttenberg's mom, and that relationship's wild. He's like, "Mom, make me all I'm asking for is fried bologna sandwich, come on." And she's like, I got shit to do.
I know. She's
like holding a knife against him.
Yeah, it was like 2 o'clock and he was still sleeping because they were up till up till 5 a.m. driving around.
And she's like, the kitchen's closed. Get the fuck out of here.
What's for breakfast?
The kitchen is closed.
I'm hungry here.
Hey, just a second. You want something to eat? Make it. I don't have all day to wait on you.
Come on, don't give me that shit. A fried bologna sandwich would be good.
Eddie, get out of the house. Billy, take him out of here.
A fried bologna sandwich is not a lot to ask for Christ's sake.
Oh, hold on, wire, Mary. Eddie, you're giving me a headache. Take a walk.
What are you gonna do? You gonna stab me? Huh? Come on. Come on. Come on.
You miserable creature.
She probably would have made him say, she did end up making it, but she would have easily, if you got up at, you know, by 10, probably would have made you that damn breakfast, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The kitchen's closed. She's clean. That's pretty funny.
And another interesting, and speaking of like the lack of women in this movie, we don't even, and I assume this is very deliberate, but we don't even see Steve Guttenberg's wife to be. We don't see her
what
face
is the point of
in
that,
the movie.
What is the thought of that? Like, what's your take on why you don't see her face?
It's the idea of him like growing up more than like any one person, maybe?
She represents more of an idea in the movie. I think that's why we don't see her actually in the movie. I mean, we see her at the end, but we don't see her.
You see
her
the back
face.
Of her head as she throws the
bouquet. We hear her voice.
We hear her, yeah. And that part is so messed up. Like, it's just so stupid. And like, there's like a whole thing in the movie. And again, this is one of the comedic bits, but I watched this thinking like, God, the 50s sucked. It's like, I'm going to give her this football quiz. And if she doesn't get 65% of it correct. And apparently he's asking her like hundreds of questions. There's a true and false section, multiple choice, short answer. It's like, this is crazy.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing.
When you watch the behind the scenes, I watched the behind the scenes of this movie, like the making of documentary that was produced in like the year 2000. And evidently this was based on like a real thing that happened. Like Barry Levinson like had a friend who did this.
This is the most asinine, dumb thing.
This is like, so stupid. And
this feels like this guy, if he had grown up, in the 2020s or something, he would be the most active on Reddit, is the vibe, I feel like.
But it's, again, it gets into, like, the what's so sad about this era, where it's just, like, how shitty women had it. You know what I mean?
What is like, he doing? What is he doing to learn about her interests?
Exactly! To, like... And I'm like, this is just going to be another relationship like Daniel Stern and Ellen Barkin, where, like, it's just like, this shit's probably not going to end well. They're probably going to get pregnant, and then they're going to have this kid, and they're going to have an eternity of shittiness. Like, that's it.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I there's a lot of moments where in this movie I was just like, did I miss something? Because they it just jump around and stuff.
It just jumps around.
And I'm kind of like, oh, yeah, like that, connecting that. Like, this movie is one that I think that probably would benefit probably from, you know, like seeing multiple times probably kind of thing. And like, it'd probably be even get funnier, I think, too.
Well, and like, it was interesting. Like, when Nick and I were done watching this, we were, you know, he compared this movie to Saturday Night Fever. And he's like, that movie, like, took those plot beats and, like, went to places. Like, it's like, we're going to go to the extreme. Like, this guy is going to kill himself. Like, he's going to jump off the bridge or whatever. This movie sets those moments up, but it doesn't go into that extreme. It just kind of, like, for instance, like, so I mentioned earlier, like,
I think it's just much more grounded. Like, Saturday Night Fever is like total melodrama.
Sets these things up, and I think the idea that is that, especially with the end of this movie is essentially The Graduate. It's like they take that picture, like they throw the bouquet, it lands on their table, and it just cuts to black and white, like it's this picture, and they all have this look on their face like, oh.
Like, yeah, like bouquet is supposed to be like your next, you know.
Their next step. Next. And it's like, are we ready for that? We don't want to go into that next step necessarily. We would just want to hang out and be friends. This is great.
Like, this is the last time they're all going to be together kind of thing.
You know? Yeah. But it's because, we're all getting married off and stuff. But in talking with Nick about this, like, I think what this movie does, because initially our thoughts were like, it's a shame that this movie doesn't go into the extremes. Like, there's a lot of things that it does where it could easily go into the extreme version.
I couldn't disagree more.
When Ellen Barkin and Mickey Rourke are getting together, they're going to have this affair, and Mickey Rourke is using this scenario as a way to, like, get paid, essentially. He made a bet that, like, I'll sleep with so-and-so, and then, but you guys will be there, like, hiding, and you'll be able to verify that I slept with this girl. And that falls through. So when he talks with Beth, the idea comes about, like, hey, we should get together and, like, maybe have an affair or something. They don't explicitly say, let's have an affair, but they're like, let's get together and like, have sex, essentially. They go into this place, and literally he's like, can you put on this wig? I'm a little, like, you know, it's, again, he somehow smooth talks his way to, like, get her to put this wig on so that the guys hiding in the room will think that that's so-and-so that he's supposed to.
And isn't one of the guys Daniel Stern?
One of the guys is Daniel Stern. Her husband.
So he's about to maybe watch his wife have sex with this man, but he doesn't realize it's his wife
because
she's wearing the wig.
Eventually Mickey Rourke is like, you know, I guess his conscience finally speaks up. It's like, nah, we shouldn't do this. And then I guess he tells her what was going to happen. And instead of being, like, mortified, she's just like, I'm glad you told me. But that's a scene where the movie could have veered into a more extreme thing when they actually do have sex and Stern witnesses it. And that is the end of their friendship. Like, there's so many different branches that this movie could have taken. But it, as you said, it takes the more grounded approach. And when Nick and I were talking about this, we were talking about how we were kind of bummed it didn't go into a more extreme result. But ultimately, I think what this movie does with the end is that it's basically setting things up that are going to pay off screen later in their lives. You know what I mean?
Well, it's funny because I didn't really think about this until now, but the movie kind of opens them leaving this like a Christmas party, and it looks as though Kevin Bacon is, like, totally wasted and he's driving, like, his little MG convertible.
That was another thing. Yes,
and then there's, like, this, he, like, makes it, this looks like as if he crashed the car, and, like,
he turns his car over. Yes,
unhinged.
It's really unhinged.
Yes,
but it's funny because what you're saying is that, like, if, like, that's how I was, like, thought this movie's gonna, like, and the movie's,
he's
almost
gonna take a prank too far and, like, kill himself,
or it's almost like the movie's saying, like, this isn't the movie where the big dramatic set piece is gonna happen. Almost in a way.
Yeah,
it's almost like that's not real life. Like, that's, it's,
yeah,
like,
this is more the more grounded take.
Like, in Boyhood, remember, like, we were all thinking, like, is someone gonna get hit by a car in this movie or something? And nothing happens in that movie either. It's just, like, I guess I'm going to sit here in the desert with my new girlfriend from college, and that's it. The movie's over.
Well, and that's, that's what I was saying. Like, we were thinking, like we were comparing it to Saturday Night Fever, and that movie goes to the extreme. But this is kind of, this is doing the opposite of that. It's sort of a similar, it's in a similar ballpark, but it's taking a different route. And like I said, I think that last shot where it's just that realization on their face is like, oh, this is our lives now. We're going to all get married and not really talk to each other again. And some of us may be in good relationships. Some of us may be in shitty, miserable relationships where we're unhappy. Like, that's sort of like, I feel like the, what it ultimately sets up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and I bet you at the time, I mean, there's lots of movies like this, like but there's, you know, in the middle of the summer, I think that's a big context for this movie. I think of just like how subtle it is compared to everything else coming out. When Rocky's fighting,
the popcorn bit and the football quiz are like the craziest things about this movie, I would say. But
yeah,
but everything else is pretty realistic and down to earth and grounded. And
it is not like that. It's very cultural significant that this is the popcorn bit, because that's a thing. I don't know. It's crazy. I don't know.
But like, I will say, like, even though a lot of this movie, like watching it through modern eyes, you know, was just like deplorable. And like I said, like watching this, like, again, I go back to like, this movie is billed as a comedy, really? Like, I think the funny exchanges in the movie, the funniest bits for me were the parts where they're just talking in the beginning, particularly with Reiser. Like, the funniest scene in the movie for me that was legitimately funny was when Reiser's like, hey, you going to finish that roast beef sandwich?
What is that, roast beef?
Don't ask me this anymore, Muldown. Yes.
You gonna finish that?
Yeah, I'm gonna finish it. I paid for it. I'm not gonna give it to you.
No. If you're not gonna finish it, I would eat it. But if you're gonna eat it,
what do you want? Say the words.
No, go ahead. You're gonna eat it. You eat it. That's all right.
Say the words. I want the roast beef sandwich. Say the words, and I'll give you a piece.
Would you guys cut this out? I mean, every time. Anything.
Well, if he doesn't talk, he just.
He means, right?
Yeah, I know what he means, but he beats around the bush. If he'd say the words, I'd give him a piece.
If I wanted it, wouldn't I ask you?
No, then ask. You know you
just let it go.
You know he wants
it.
You're annoying. I'm annoying. I'm trying to eat a meal by myself.
If you want to give him the sandwich, give him the sandwich. If you don't want to give him the sandwich, don't.
I don't want to give him
the. Well, then just eat the sandwich. And shut up.
Well, look at his eyes.
I ask one simple question. You get it. You know what your problem is? You don't chew your food. That's why you get so irritable. It lumps. You have like roast beef in your heart. It just stays there.
Oh, Modell, you're really, really getting me mad now. My blood is boiling.
It's like we all have a friend like that Just ask for what you want. Like, you know what I mean?
That's a good dynamic that they carry through.
I mean, I could tag along with you. Yeah. It's like, just come with me. God damn it.
I enjoy your company.
Yeah. But that was like legitimately fun scene, like whether it was written or improvised, whatever. Like, that was a funny scene. It just keeps going on and on. And eventually Daniel Stern just takes the sandwich. Like, I'm going to eat this sandwich. Fuck it. It's like, God, you're annoying. Like, that was legitimately funny. It was bred from the characters. It wasn't like a crazy scenario that happens like the popcorn. It was just a funny thing that came out of conversation. But everything else, like, again, just the realizations that, like, God, these people are in, like, you know, terrible relationships, and they just can't, like, one of them's like a degenerate gambler, and one of them's like, you know, and that was another thing. Comparing this with Saturday Night Fever, in Saturday Night Fever, those are all kind of like, you know, very unprivileged kids. Like, they come from like bad neighborhood or whatever. Everyone in this movie seems to be very privileged.
Well, like we were talking about in like Saturday Night Fever, is like, there's more of a, like, I got to get out of this hellhole.
Yeah, I got to get out of this crap.
You know, AKA Brooklyn in the 70s or whatever. But this one is more like, there's not really like, I got to get out of this town vibe.
It's, like, Bacon's a trust fund kid.
Yeah, although they do like say what his trust fund is, which is $100 a month until he's 23, which is certainly not nothing, but like I don't ever have to work again.
Rockefeller or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, exactly, make me Rockefeller.
I know. Yeah. It is funny how shitty he is about, ungrateful he is about that. Like, $100 a month until you're 23, especially in 1959, is not nothing. But it's not like, I'm never going to work again, you know, or I don't never have to worry about a job.
Well, he was kind of like the slacker of his time, you know? Yeah. Anyway, but no, I think this is ultimately, I think this is a good movie. Like, Nick and I were kind of saying, like, we didn't love it, but like, It's a movie like you definitely like when you see this movie with your friends and you're leaving the theater. It's a movie that you're going to be talking about like in the parking lot for like an extended period of time before you go off to your own.
I liked it a fair amount actually, and I think it would be good on rewatches. I think this would be a good rewatch movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I could.
It's very watchable. It's very watchable. Like good performances. And
they're
like,
all great performances. Yeah. Like some of them are like they're scummy characters oftentimes, but like it's good performances.
I think the movie loses me a little bit in like the whole let's put a wig on you bet kind of stuff. Like I'm just a little bit like over it by then, I think, kind of thing. But it is interesting. And I like this type of movie a lot. I think it's, but they're ones that never, like, I remember, speaking of Boyhood, like, they're not very satisfying at the right away. I think those movies a lot of times
slow burns.
They slow burn with you later. I think a lot of these things where you're just kind of like, it's tough. I mean, every once in a while they hit like a dart, you know. But like sometimes it, like I was thinking of other ones that people either love or hate. Like these are all like one character based. Like Frances Ha is like another one kind of thing. But that's all like one person. That's very her jumping around from people to people. There's not really a plot to that movie either. Other than like maybe she's gonna teach dance or something, but I'm just like, so I like this type of movie. It's just it's different when it's a bunch of different people, and it's interesting putting them separate in different things, and that's what makes it different, I think.
Yeah,
is like you like I remember like there's like times like I remember there was like this that was with this one group, and there was a guy that like that I think got in a car accident. It might have been alcohol involved or whatever, and like we never, I feel like we never followed up with him. Like he's alive and stuff, but it was like after that, like it was like this, it was someone like an acquaintance of the group kind of thing, and it's just like what, and that kind of, I thought about that a little bit, like around watching this, is like those little moments of like time, just like did we fuck up? Like what happened there? You know, so you know, it's weird. Those it's about paths you didn't you took or you didn't take.
Well, any closing thoughts on Diner before we get into recommendations?
It did make me... We've talked about some movies that make you want to smoke because everyone's like smoking. This movie made me want black coffee in a Diner mug really bad.
That reminds me. There was a moment in the movie where I was waiting for confirmation of what this was. So during the Diner scenes, we see a plate of fries on the table covered in what looks like a brown substance.
Yeah, it's great. Like, disco fries. That? That's an
and
East Coast thing.
And later on, it's Mickey Rourke. He says, like, fries with gravy. I was like, it was gravy. Okay, I got
This is an East Coast Diner thing. Okay. The disco fries.
Because I'm like, where is the familiar red on those
Well,
fries
it's like
there?
The... Like doesn't poutine have gravy on it? Kind of
poutine
thing?
Has that and cheese. I mean that's a Canadian thing, but the disco
there's
fries.
There's probably a little bit of there's a little bit creeping down there.
Well, I mean, I'm not poo pooing it. That sounds great. I mean, you put gravy on potatoes. French fries are potatoes. Makes sense to me.
Yeah,
sounds pretty good. Actually, I can go for a plate of gravy fries.
I want fries.
But I would, you know what? Ultimately, I think I would recommend it. I think this movie kind of snuck up on me a little bit, like. Like I was kind of stewing on it a bit more. This is a movie I feel like you stew on a bit after you watch it, and I ultimately would recommend it. It's not the greatest thing ever. Again, like it was watching it through modern eyes. It was like a lot of the scenes in this movie just don't play, like the popcorn and the football quiz.
Yeah.
I'm just like these are horrible. It is of its time. But ultimately, I would recommend it. I think there's a lot you can kind of pick out of this movie that maybe you don't pick up on the first time, like you said.
Yeah, I would recommend it maybe a little higher than you. It's just shy of greatness for me, but I do think it's quite good. I would just say, like, if you're into these hangout movies, or if you have some patience for hangout movies, if you have patience for movies where, like, quote unquote, nothing happens, then it's a recommend.
Yeah, same.
Well, this was the more quiet side of 1982. When we return, it'll be the month of June, and we'll be talking about one of the more big blockbuster movies of the decade. We'll be going to 80s suburbia with Steven Spielberg and Tobe Hooper in Poltergeist.
Whoa, they're here, Dave. They're here.
You didn't move the bodies or something. Whatever. I don't know that quote.
Dang it.
You didn't put the Miles Davis record back in the R&B section, did ya?
That's good.
My chills feel like rain. Ain't that a shame? You're the one to blame.
Take out the song.
Keep driving?
Nah. Might as well call it a night.